Welcome to Complementary, a series covering the principles and practices of interface design hosted by Katie Langerman and Anthony Hobday. Today we'll be discussing design systems. Also, I would like to let you know that my cat is not in the room and the door is locked and he will not be intruding today, but he is crying outside of the door right now. So hopefully that is not picked up.
Poor Sprinkles.
Poor Sprinkles. So you brought up the topic of design systems to me in a very casual email. And
yes,
I was so excited that you wanted to talk about this, but I also responded very cool and casual, like, oh, that's a great idea. I would love to talk about that. But deep down, I was like, this is my favorite topic. And I've been wanting to talk about this, but I didn't want to be the one to bring it up because obviously it's my job.
Mm.
So I was super excited.
Yeah, part of the reason this show is called Complementary, as far as I know, is that we do different things in our day-to-day. And you seem to live and breathe design systems, if I can describe it that way. Whereas I'm a much more casual design systems person in the sense that I usually work for quite small design teams, or maybe I'm the only designer, and therefore I use what I think will help me to be more efficient. But, you know, I mean, I guess we'll get into this, but generally it feels like design systems is almost a different area that I'm not really involved in. And so that's why I thought today's podcast or today's episode might be good if I basically grilled you on design systems, because I always appreciate a different perspective. And just because I don't use them daily, it's sort of the, I get the sense that I'm probably not exploring them enough, but they're a huge topic.
Yeah.
I mean, there are conferences and Figma seems to be wholly focused on design systems as a sort of organizational focus, which as someone who is focused on sort of visual design skills, partly, sort of bothers me, because that's, they are the tool that everyone does visual design in, and they keep doing conferences about design systems. And I'm thinking, who else is going to provide the conference about visual design if not Figma? But, you know, I think they know I think they know which side their bread is buttered on. Is that even a phrase?
I don't think I've heard that.
I think they know which side of the cat lands feet down when they drop it. I'm just making up phrases about commercial success and how they get it. But yes, so I wanted to basically grill you about design systems.
Okay.
And I think the first thing I want to find out, because as far as I know, this is a controversial question, is how do you define a design system? But specifically, I want to ask it in the way that I usually tend to try to define things, which is, what's the most specific definition of a design system that everyone would agree on?
Yes.
Because I see a lot of disagreement and I don't want that. I want, what's the foundational core that everyone's like, yes, that is a design system.
Yeah. I think it's funny that you phrase it that way, because like agreeing on things and consensus is just like a huge part of design systems work. Mm. It's like 80% of my job is just getting people to agree on what to call things. But I define a design system as a collection of reusable patterns, components, and standards that are generally shared across an entire company. Sometimes one company can have multiple smaller design systems or like related sister design systems that build off of each other. Like, for example, something specific for product compared to brand, because they have a different look and feel. But they generally will share something, like if it's design patterns, if it's sizing and spacing, colors is one that they could share. There's some like underlying connection between all of those things, even if they have different visual style. And I would say the goal of a design system, I think many of us working in design systems get kind of caught up in the, I don't want to say the word glamour, the glamour of it all, but you were just talking about how Figma is like really into giving us fun tools. But it's easy to get caught up in just the developer experience of it and or the designer experience of it and forget that the whole point of it is to create a better end user experience and create more cohesive interfaces and reduce duplication and increase like reusable things. So if you're introducing something in your site, a user isn't going to get like an entirely new experience every time there's a new feature or something like that.
Hmm. Okay, so let me challenge your definition a little bit. Okay. See if I can stretch it or shrink it or whatever. So if a company has 5 designers and one, they're doing everything custom, each person is working on their own stuff, and maybe they're having conversations with each other like, oh, what border radius do you think I should put on this or whatever. One day they will wake up and decide, okay, we want to make the whole app look consistent, and we're going to do that by saying that these 10 colors are our interface colors. We're going to define what they are, maybe name them in some way, and share them so that all of us have access to some kind of resource where we can say, I'm going to use a color. Which colors can I use? Oh, it's one of these 10. I'll choose this one. Is that just that? Is that a design system?
Ooh, not yet. It's on its way. That's just like a shared style. So you could have even like something like a component library isn't necessarily a design system. And that's probably what you see the most controversial takes on, like angry tweets of like, that's not even a design system. That's just a whatever. because people feel like design systems handle much more than just shared components. Like they're meant to kind of, sure, they can give you a component library, or in the case of colors, like a style library of here's your colors, like Figma gives you styles. But they should also tell you like how to use all of those things together, how the system is built and how it works together, and how to compose things and give you a set of guidelines and standards on how to use these things and where and why. So it's like a lot more goes into it than just sharing styles.
Mm. Because I care a lot about words, and I think I've touched on before on this podcast that I don't use some words because I don't sort of like how people are using them, like skeuomorphic. I try to avoid words where I think it's too overloaded or not everyone agrees on the meaning, so I'll choose a different word that means something much more specific. And so just the name design system, it makes me feel like anything that helps you to design more systematically is a design system. And that feels like the only definition that the name can bear the weight of, essentially. And beyond that, that's where the disagreements come from, maybe, because everyone sees the word system and understands something different.
Mm-hmm. I think to that point, something that kind of upsets people on the internet is when we talk about design systems only from a design perspective. So like you'll see some companies, or like if you're looking for jobs in design systems, sometimes the entire job is built around maintaining a Figma component library, and that's it. Like there is no code involved in your design system. Mm. And that irks people because it doesn't feel like a design system at that point. It does just kind of feel like a tool that designers are using. But if it has zero like connection to the code, or the engineers don't even know about it, and they're still just rebuilding stuff every time, it's not helping the end user at all. So it's basically just your own tool inside of your design tool like Figma that may make it easier to work, but it doesn't impact the end user. And that's where people get a little frustrated, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I think we need some new names, but I'll let you spearhead that project. Like an end user experience system, you know, maybe suggests more.
Let's take a
more of a refocus. Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like that there are reasons for why people get angry at each other about the definition of design system.
I suppose. And, I don't think people should ever get angry at each other on the internet, honestly. Like,
oh yeah, I mean it's not good that they're doing that, but there are causes, you know.
I'm happy if all you can manage is a Figma library, that is at least something. Like it's better than nothing. So I don't think it's fair to just discourage people and say you're not allowed to use our words to define what you're building because it's not official enough. So it like maybe if the word design system feels more accessible and inclusive, then people will strive towards building it out more than just a Figma library. Like, let's be welcoming of all the different perspectives, I guess. So, yeah.
And so next I want to talk about tokens, because tokens come up a lot.
Yep.
And I guess, first of all, I should ask you for a definition of the word token.
Oh, geez.
For our listeners who may be...
How would I define that? This one's probably much more controversial than the word design system. I define a design token as a piece of information related to your design that is codified into a variable that you can reuse anywhere or in whatever context that token is associated with. So as an example, you might have a primary button color that is going to be that color always throughout your interface. So you would probably have a token related to that color. And then you always know this is the primary button color. And if I want to change it, I can change it one time and it will kind of cascade throughout my entire application.
So if that sounds like tokens are essentially variables that any developer would be familiar with, then where does the controversy come from?
I think maybe this, again, is one that is confusing for designers who do not understand code at all. Because I think from a code perspective, it's really clear. We've all been using, well, I guess many of us have been using like SAS variables in our CSS for so long that it's like, oh, okay, so you mean a variable. Yes, that's pretty much it. But it goes further than just a SAS variable that's meant to make it easier to write your CSS in some way. It's kind of, I always use the word tokenizing. It's like setting in stone specific design decisions and extending it to be used in your code or kind of in Figma. Not really, not totally yet. Like, we only have color and typography right now. So there, it's super limited there. But in code, it's like you could have a token for spacing and sizing and border radius, like all this stuff that's like the lowest level primitive of your design system, or it could be if that's how you architect it.
Hmm. And so, again, because I like to play with definitions, could it be considered a design system if it's essentially only a collection of tokens?
I mean,
I'll give you a scenario. If I say to this team of five independent designers who work on their own independent projects, you can essentially design the screens however you like, but you must only use these tokens, that spacing, border radius, and colors. And through the use of these tokens, you will make it feel more like the brand we are aiming for.
Yeah. I think it can if they are really extensive tokens. So it can't just be colors, typography, and like using a base size scale. That's kind of the bare minimum. I think it has to go further, like components. So this is the height of our button. This is the inline padding of our button. Also like layout. Can you create design tokens for layout, like sizing, or is it a split layout? Is it a single column, two columns, like all that kind of stuff? Like, you can go really deep with it, I think, and tokenize tons of stuff. And then that can be used to build with, but it's not that efficient, is it? Like, it's easier to have a button component than it is to say, here's all the tokens for the button component. Now just rebuild it every single time you want to use it.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I suppose it, at risk of reinventing atomic design, I suppose it goes in essentially layers of tokens, where you might have all of your spacing tokens. This is the small size space. This is the medium size. This is the large size space. And then you could say, here's another token that defines the button padding. And that uses the small size space token. But it's still a token in its own right, but it's sort of building on the previous level of more, whatever nice way of saying like dumb tokens is, you know, the more primitive tokens.
The base.
You're building on something that has more meaning.
Yes, exactly. So we call those at GitHub, we call them like the base level tokens. Everybody calls them something else. Someone might say global or primitive, like you said. And those are like lowest level representations of a value. So you might have base size 4, which is 4 pixels. It will never change. It will always be 4 pixels. But you could have button inline padding referencing that base size 4. And that might change to 8 someday. So then you would just reference a different size. So And that's what we call, at GitHub, we call that the functional layer, but semantic is a good word for it too, because it's like actually representing a piece of UI.
Okay, yeah. And I can see a point about if you only had those primitive tokens as a design system, then every designer who designed a button might choose a different, top and bottom padding. And that's no bueno, because it might be the right color and it might use a multiple of two for the spacing or the padding, but it'll be a different size or shape. And
right.
It feels inconsistent. So I can see that.
And then an engineer picks it up and they think, oh, I guess we're just changing the button, so I'll just rebuild it for you in this one time. And then your interface has many different buttons that were built, because that's just how it goes when we don't have access to components in Figma. Or even when you do. That's more of a communication problem between designers and developers. But it leads more towards that risk.
So I was going to go, I was going to ask you about the advantages and disadvantages of that approach, but it sounds like there are good reasons not to take that approach in the first place. So instead, I'm going to ask you about the opposite end of the spectrum, which is the full scale. Here are all your components. Mm-hmm. You can basically slot together screens based on the things we've agreed are the right building blocks for, you know, screens across the app or the website, whatever it happens to be. What are the advantages and disadvantages of having that complete high level design system?
Advantages are it's just easier to use, and that's kind of mostly a limitation of our tools, I would say. So Figma is great with components. Pretty great. I think it could be better. It's getting great. They've given us a lot of cool stuff. That's the easiest way to share styles in Figma right now. We can have style libraries, but again, like you said, how do I use these colors unless they're specifically named? And it's kind of a lot of work. We don't have any way to share sizing tokens or border radius or anything, but we can kind of sneak those into Figma components in hacky ways that we've all written about and discussed over the past couple of years. So having that full picture, I think, makes it a lot easier to work with for designers. For developers, it means they can just import stuff, use it. They don't have to rebuild a button component every single time they need something. It kind of sets everyone up for success to build interfaces. But it does, how do you break out of it if you need to, becomes the question. And that's something that every design system has to figure out, like on the code level, of like, how much do we allow people to override and customize things? Or in Figma, how many people are detaching their component instance and breaking it? So there's always different ways to override it. And it's a matter of like, how does that design systems team communicate what is appropriate, what is allowed? Do they even offer it at all easily? So there's a couple things there.
And on that point of breaking out of it, do you think it's practically possible for, let's say, a large scale company to set up a design system, let's call it use it perfectly, in the sense that they set up a design system and you never have to create these sort of custom or unique elements? Or if you do, they sort of go into the design system, right? They go into the process.
Yeah.
So they can be used again. Do you think it's possible for a company to use a design system perfectly, or will there always be failures?
This is a really hard question, because I feel like at least all of my professional experiences with design systems have been creating a design system out of an existing product. And so we're kind of retrofitting things. Like, we're not creating a super beautiful, complete design system that you then start using to build your product. It's always the product has been built. What do we do now? We have all this duplicated code everywhere. We got to like reconcile things. And so you're just constantly kind of fixing and updating and pulling in existing patterns. Or maybe you're pulling in patterns that you don't even like, but you need to pull them in so you can push them back out and then you can fix them later. So there's like a lot of, I've never worked on a completely idealistic, perfect design system. I wonder if that exists. Like, I just can't think of, I just don't imagine any new company is like, okay, we're going to start this new company with this new product idea in mind. first thing, we're going to build our design system and then we'll build our product with it perfectly. No one's going to do that because they need a MVP. They just need a proof of concept of what they want to build. And then we can clean it up later and make our design system later. So I don't even know if I can't think of an example of where a design system is used perfectly. I think it's always going to be overridden in places, or custom stuff is going to come up, because generally we have rules like, if this pattern shows up 3 or more times, then we'll pull it into our design system. And there's always going to be one-off patterns that come up, and we don't want to maintain those, because especially for like a brand or marketing thing where it's like, we just need this landing page for this feature that we're launching, and it's going to exist for a couple of months and then it's going to be gone. It's like not worth the effort of upstreaming that into the system. So I don't know. I think we all work on these things with the knowledge that people are going to break them. And the goal is to like make it, I don't know, help them break it in as safest way possible, or give them tools that allow them to customize in a safe way that still sort of like fits into the system.
Yeah. I think based on what I've learned about quality in general, my suspicion, not knowing much about design systems, is that the only way you can get close to a perfect situation with a design system is with a very small piece of software or a very small team or company. So you have limited needs, basically, and you can then deliver a perfect design system, at which point I suspect that a design system essentially isn't necessary, because at which point you can essentially keep everything in your mind. You don't have enough designers to even worry about shared components or anything. And your design system could probably be the set of screens that are in your app. You know, they just sit there perfectly formed in Figma in a row, and you go in and change the one that you want to change. And you know it has to be consistent or whatever. So maybe you could design and use a perfect design system in that situation, but ironically, you don't need it anymore.
Right. So you put more effort into building like compositions that can be reused. You might still build like a button component, but you might have like a hero section or like a something for a landing page. A landing page might actually be its own component, because you're just always going to be reusing like similar patterns for that throughout your app. And that's unlikely to find that in a design system, because we tend to think more lower level components than that.
Yeah. I'm imagining something like a mobile app that's quite a narrow use case. And so it's only got 4 screens, for example. And so I can see how it would be easy to create the perfect design system and cover all of the sort of possibilities in that situation. But really, at that point, you don't need a design system, because you're only designing 4 screens. You'll only ever be designing or maybe updating 4 screens. But yeah, as you say, you might have a button component that gets used across 3 of the screens just to save yourself some time.
Mm-hmm.
But you're probably not going to bother to document it all.
Right.
Because I suspect any new designer that joined the company would be able to look at the 4 screens and figure it out pretty quickly.
Yeah. If you grow a lot eventually, maybe you'll need to break it down into smaller patterns. I think that's part of what we think about a lot in design systems, is like the future. How can we future-proof is the right term. I don't think love that term either, but just like how will this scale if new people need to join the team and understand this? Because for a really small team, like you said, if everything's just in your head, like that's great until you leave or somebody else joins, and then they need to understand how all of these things work. So that's where design systems can be really helpful.
I don't mean to get too close, too deep into the fluffy stuff, but I always think of things like entropy in situations like this, where so much of human effort is about fighting entropy, and things are naturally going to tend towards disorder, and you're trying to put them into order.
Oh,
but
yes.
It's a never-ending process across all of human experience. And so probably it's just the nature of a design system that you are constantly trying to fight entropy and always failing, but you're failing forwards almost, you know.
I
hopefully
hadn't thought about it in that way, but I have been thinking a lot about quality lately, because I read that article that you posted recently about quality. That one's been circulating a lot, and it the kind of the outcome of that article in my mind felt like, well, you really just have to be working on a really small team to be able to have that kind of quality. But I think as a design systems designer slash developer, I almost see myself as like an editor. And I am definitely fighting against chaos. And I'm always trying to create order. But there is something really cool about allowing new patterns to emerge outside of the system, because that's always going to happen. And then it kind of falls onto your plate of like, well, how do we get this into the system? Like, where, how can we make this scalable as something that other people can use? And so you become an editor at that point. And you get to just kind of rip it apart. You get to say that border radius was one pixel off from our standard. I'm going to update it. And now it's now it's standardized. And it feels so good that it's using our system. All these tiny little things that I think we attribute to quality that sometimes get overlooked when we're shipping new features and we're building something as an MVP. We're building something at scale. There's 10 designers working on it, whatever. So that's why I love design systems work, because I get to focus on quality. It would be weird if I didn't focus on it. Like, it would be a step backwards if we were just pulling things into our system that were kind of broken out of the system already. So maybe, is it design systems are the future of quality?
Well, I think it's sort of a fundamental truth, right? That we, some of the signals we look for when we're looking for quality are about orderliness. You know, we look for signifiers in interfaces and everywhere else in life that tell us this thing is good quality. And generally that comes down to whether it sort of matches expectations and is orderly and everything. And so, yeah, I can completely see that design systems are essentially a way to deliver quality at scale. Well, that's one of the goals. Obviously there are other goals, but I doubt that. I think that's one of the reasons that they've become so important as software has grown as an industry, because those companies need a way to deliver quality when it becomes much harder. And if you spend a lot of time systematizing?
I don't know. I should know.
I don't know how many extra letters I should include. If you spend a lot of time putting that into a system, then you have a much better chance of at least delaying the inevitable, based on my sort of pessimistic views of how possible quality is at scale.
Yeah.
We've already talked about small teams versus large teams, which is going to be my next question. And so I'm going to twist it slightly, which is, how does a company know at which point they need to start thinking about design systems?
I think anytime they're looking to scale up, you kind of have to. In my last role, I sort of started the design system. I would call it more of a component library, though, which is funny because we just talked about what does the word design system mean? Mm. And that was much more of a component library that I was forming because the company was scaling and I was the only like real designer engineer hybrid there. So I could kind of figure out how to codify that into something shareable. But that was, I don't know how many people we were. It was a huge engineering org with like three designers. That's the kind of environment, as you can imagine. That's probably a really good indicator as well. If you have really limited design support and a huge engineering team, like putting those designers on a design system could be beneficial, because then they can really like reach their arms out and extend much further beyond just the small product that they might be working on with a couple of engineers, and they can hopefully impact all of those engineers if they can. There's a lot of politics that goes into that one, but if they can get that reach and have somebody in leadership supporting them to say like, this is our design system, you have to use it, that kind of thing. So that can help scale even if you're a small team.
It's made me realize something which is probably quite a fundamental sort of basic truth that all design system people think is, silly to even have a realization about. But I tend to think as a designer about design systems in terms of more efficiency as I'm designing. So I don't want to keep having, I know how to design the button from scratch, but I don't want to have to keep designing it from scratch. And then I can go and update the button component elsewhere in Figma and it'll change all the buttons, right? So that saves me a lot of time. But it's interesting to think about design systems in terms of making communication easier or more possible between design and engineering, because just having those shared and agreed terms almost So I could say to a developer, oh, it's a primary button, and so actually I don't need to draw it in the first place. That's both saved me some time, but also it's something that they can go and look up the definition of. And so if you have, like you said, three designers and let's say 20 developers, the role of each designer is a bit, or the responsibility of each designer to tell each of those developers how to build something they've designed is a bit too much unless you have those shared terms they can all agree on.
Yeah.
And so I tend not to think about it in those terms, but I can see why now some people might say a design system is not just a component library in Figma, because it has to reach over to the engineering organization before you see some of the key benefits.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. At GitHub, our design system has a name, so it's called Primer. Not all design systems have a name, but just even having a name helps improve communication, because you would get a question of like, I have this design that I was given by my designer. Is this a primer button? Is this a primer dropdown? Is this a primer dialogue? Like, they know to first look to see, like, is this part of Primer before I build this thing? Because their designer might not even communicate that, because they probably assume they know it's a Primer component. And Figma, I think, will even, like, let's say you have a Figma library of your component library and it's called Primer or whatever. I think Figma even says in there, if you're inspecting it as a developer, like, button from this library. So it's kind of clear. It's still not crystal clear, but there's some indication that this is not a brand new button. This is a button from the existing library. I can just use that. And so it just becomes a part of the culture. The more people engage with it, I think it's hard to start that culture. I've been there trying to start that culture. I'm lucky to join GitHub, where it's just such a big part of the culture here for like over 10 years that people just know to look for a primer component. But it can be challenging to be the one like trying to socialize it in a company if you're the one building it for the first time.
Yeah, I can imagine. It seems like designers are often the ones that are sort of expected to change the culture of a company. Always tough. Well, I guess we're always pushing for more better design stuff, which is, of course, we're going to be the ones who have to, you know, try to change the culture if that's what we're pushing for.
Yep.
But I've had a sort of a mini version of this experience, I suppose, recently, because we're changing the style of the app I work on in my full-time job. And I design the new style. There's one other designer who, he's aware of the new style, of course, because he has to be, but he's not been involved in the project because he's working on other things. So I'm basically one designer designing a new style for the app. And I essentially put together some style guides in Figma, where I laid out, you know, let's say background color, border color, text color, that sort of thing, for all these different states or visual styles that elements could be in. And then it had a few different sort of iterations of how I named those things, but I ended up giving them more semantic names. And so there'll be one style, a visual style called important. And actually that could be applied to a card style element, or it could be applied to a button. It could be applied to sort of a whole pane of the screen. If it's like a document or something, we style that in the same way. And it's really helped that I've given them these semantic names, because I'm working with one developer. So it's just me and this one developer, just two people. And you'd think communication would be easy. You wouldn't need a design system. But previously, he would have had to say, oh, what color should I use for this element? And I would have had to give him a hex code for the background and the border and the text, potentially. But now I've noticed that we're just having these conversations quickly on Slack, where he says, oh, this element type, is that important style or sort of secondary style or whatever I've named them? And I just go back and go, oh, no, that's, standard style or whatever. And so just having those names that refer to this collection of tokens, essentially.
Yeah.
It's just sped up our communication, and it's made for less misunderstanding. And it's made it much less annoying a process for both of us, I assume.
That just warms my little design system heart.
You haven't got a little design system. You've got such a big design system heart.
That makes me so happy. I love hearing stuff like that. Because it's like you're talking about, like, you came up with the word important. That term is probably different in different design systems. We use the word emphasis usually, but like, it doesn't matter, because all that matters is that you and the person you're working with understand what that means and you agreed on it and it's improved your communication. And you're lucky. It's a lot easier to name things with smaller teams. Once you have a massive amount of people that you're like, okay, can we all try to agree on this thing? I think it took us like almost a quarter just to come up with the entire naming convention, not the names, just the convention for naming the updated tokens I've been working on. So everything just takes longer when there's more people involved, but just agreement on it and consensus is usually key and kind of the ideal situation.
Yeah. So I suppose that partly as well answers my question about what's the point at which you should start to have a design system sort of appearing, you know. And actually, it, from my own experience, it turns out that you should probably have something that looks like a design system if you sort of squint at it. even when you've just got one designer working with one developer and they're isolated from everyone else, which is the situation I'm in, because just that feedback loop of, is this the right element type? Oh no, it's this type, becomes so much quicker and less frustrating for everyone.
I think it's important to think about the application of those styles too. It sounds like that's exactly what you were like working towards and made some changes towards. Because if you're kind of, as a designer, off in a corner, picking all of your colors, for example, and you're not thinking about how they will be applied, like, is this a text color? Is this a border color? Is it a background color? Foreground icon? Like, your system won't really make a lot of sense, and you'll very quickly run into problems with the developer when they're like, I'm not sure when to use this color or this token where. And so working really closely with engineering, I think, is critical. Or if you're a person that does both, good for you. That's why design systems are great for hybrid people, because you can do kind of both things at once.
I think you mean unicorns.
Oh, no.
Designer developers. One of the many definitions of the word unicorn in technology.
Yeah.
And it's the interesting thing I noticed, to your point about, I call it important, and at GitHub you call it, you know, emphasis, is that I realized halfway through, wait, these are the wrong names and it's not flexible enough. I need to use different names, a different naming system, like you said. And so I started to think about in terms of emphasis levels. Okay, so you've got emphasis level 0 might be like the base background or whatever. Emphasis level 1 might be you've made it slightly more visually important. And I quite like those things, because I know you've gone through hell for this, but I quite like that sort of challenge, because you're trying to find something that works across different visual styles, like light and dark mode.
Yeah.
And what you can't say brightness level, because it's not necessarily brighter in, you know, the light mode or the dark mode or wherever it happens to be. So I have realized and have run into troubles with wanting to rename everything, because while it's being developed, it turns out it's actually quite hard to change all those variable names. So we're going to have to design it all this way and then go back and sort of re-architect it a bit. But hopefully that can happen.
That's okay. You're editing. That's part of the process. Yeah. You're basically describing an ordinal scale, which is definitely an important part of a token name. And if you just look up ordinal scale, like, you can find a ton of different examples of words that you can use. The thesaurus is like my favorite website of all time when I'm naming design tokens.
Oh yeah.
But one thing we ran into at GitHub is we are currently coming out of a situation where we had used the term muted and subtle as two different colors, or two different scales of one color. And those words literally mean the same exact thing, like, definition wise. And so people were very confused of like, when do I use muted versus subtle? It's just become kind of a thing. These things happen. I think it makes sense as to why it occurred. And now with the experience we have of using it and the new naming convention, we can come out of it, try and work on, like, I don't know if you are using the words like default or primary and secondary and tertiary, but that's my favorite because it just can keep going and it doesn't need to, you need to think, open thesaurus and think about like, what's another word for subtle? Or like, how do I describe something more subtle than subtle? Like, it gets really hard. So if you give yourself a really specific ordinal scale, like, or using numbers, like you were saying, and just assign meaning to those numbers, like, you're good. You can just keep extending forever and it will just work.
Yeah. Okay, I've got two practical questions for you. One, okay, which was just came up because you mentioned primary, secondary, tertiary, and you can just keep going. Because I've looked this up myself. What is the fourth
in that
scale of primary, secondary, tertiary?
Does it start with
it's
a
hard to even look this up online.
I don't know. I don't even know. I don't know. Wow. Maybe it's not a good scale to use then.
Well, as long as you only have three button types, for example, then primary, secondary, tertiary. I think we looked it up and it was quaternary.
Yes. Okay. I knew it started with a Q.
I don't think we could find the one for the fifth level because it was hard enough to find quaternary.
Yeah.
From memory. Because they're all sort of based on different language origins. So you've got to find the right language origin, like Greek or Latin or whatever it happens to be able to even find the sort of next one in the progression.
Yeah.
Like prize, second, ter, not try, right? That's.
I learned about these words from using Bootstrap when I first learned CSS way back in the day, because I think they had primary, secondary, and tertiary buttons. And I was like, what's the word tertiary mean? Oh, okay. I do think it's probably where you'd ever go beyond that. I think that's true. But it is nice to have the option too, if you want.
Yeah.
I guess you'll always run out of numbers though. Like, it, well, I don't know. It just depends on how you're naming things, but you're always going to run out of things. So it's never going to be perfect.
But that, I guess numbers is what my next practical question was about, is why do design systems use numbers in the hundreds for the color stops?
I don't know.
So you get 100 through to 900.
I have no idea. Do we do that?
I have seen, I think I know the answer to my own question because I have seen cases where design systems will add in a halfway point between 800 and 900, for example, and call it 850. And I think I have seen people add a halfway point between those two and call it 825. And so I think you need three digits if you're going to halve it twice.
That makes
for
sense.
The halfway points.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we just use 0 through 9 at GitHub. I had to look that up, which is shocking because I literally stare at these all day, every day. But that's problematic.
They're just the primitive tokens. In case you don't need to think about
we
this.
Don't need to know. But it's problematic for us because especially on the gray scale where we feel like we need more than 9. Well, what are we going to do? Add a 3.5? Like, we can't add anything without breaking it. And so our solution is let's deal with it on the functional layer. And we'll still reference right now. One of my colleagues, Lucas, helped me kind of engineer a solution we're calling mix. So with code, we do it with code. We can mix like gray 4 and gray 3 and then give it a weight to say how much we want to mix it. And then we can get a color in between. It's basically lighten or darken without breaking the scale. Well, kind of breaking the scale. We're inside the scale. We're just in between somewhere. So it's our little way around not breaking our entire base color system because that would be a lot of work to update everywhere. So, yeah.
I'm thinking of those, the design systems that sort of commonly use three digits to represent the color scale. And then I'm thinking of that Onion article where they made fun of the three blade razors by saying, F it, we're going to 5 blades. And that was a joke at the time, but now Gillette have gone to 5 blades. And so like the Onion came true, which often happens. But now I'm thinking that design systems should just say like, F it, we're going to 5 digits of numbers. Like this is blue 10,000. And then we'll have a lot of leeway
so
between
options.
That. To,
Yeah,
naming stuff. I know that classically developers talking about how hard naming things is. I suppose naming things in this case is hard for the basically the same reason is that you need to set something that will be okay in the future.
Yeah.
And that's tricky, whatever your profession is.
It's very high pressure because you want to set people up for success. But eventually you'll probably be the person that left the company and everyone will be like, why is this called tertiary? What does this even mean? Let's change it. Let's use numbers. But But I don't know. That's why consensus becomes important, at least to me when I'm working on design tokens. I really try to get as much consensus as possible so that people just know how to use it. I don't necessarily, like, I will document how to use it, but I want people to, I want it to feel like somewhat natural to them as they adjust to new names.
Yeah. If they can, if they have an anchor in their head about sort of how they can assume it works, which I guess is the same as interfaces in general, right? You use mental models that hopefully people associate with.
Mm-hmm.
And because the people who use design systems are people too. And they need the correct mental models.
Yeah. It's design systems for the people. That's what it's for.
I'm going to do something that I don't normally do, which is point out that we're nearing the end of the episode, because this is the longest, as you sort of promised at the start of the episode, this is the longest episode we've recorded. And so, yeah, I can believe you that you could talk about design systems basically forever. Yeah.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to talk about it, because it really made my day. I feel great having gotten to talk about it more. And
well, fun. I mean, you're an expert. It's, we should really take advantage of that expertise since we've got a podcast. It's be silly not to.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you in the next one.